welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host. Joining us from New Jersey, author and friend Anthony DiStefano. Two books, From Bread and Wine to Saints Divine, and The Story of the First Easter Bunny, both published by our friends over at Sophia Press, and of course, naturally available through the EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic and all things for great books for kids, especially when we have Anthony on a program. Not to pigeonhole you, you've had some bestsellers on other topics, but you've done a lot of great kids' books. So tell us what prompted you. Let's talk about the first one, From Bread and Wine to Saints Divine. What prompted you on this particular book?
Well, sure. This is a children's book that attempts to explain the sacrament of the Eucharist in a way that's simple, engaging, hopefully entertaining, and of course, theologically sound. It takes kids on a journey through the idea of change, something we all experience in life and something that children, I think, are especially fascinated by. The book shows real everyday changes that kids recognize, like a caterpillar becoming a butterfly, or night turning into day, or flour and sugar transforming into a birthday cake. And then it connects those changes to the greatest transformation of all, bread and wine becoming the body and blood of Jesus Christ. And then it goes even further. It shows the reason we receive the Eucharist, so that we can change. We take Jesus into ourselves so that we can become more like him, so that we can grow in holiness and love and truth. And so this book really is about two miraculous transformations: what happens on the altar at Mass, and what's meant to happen to us when we receive the Eucharist in a worthy manner on a regular basis.
Right, and again, targeted in a way for kids and done in rhyme. What was interesting, you dedicated this book to your brother, who's a priest. I didn't actually realize your brother was a priest.
Yeah, he's my youngest brother. I'm the oldest of five. He's the youngest. We're bookends, and he is a priest in the Archdiocese of New York. Okay. And he runs two parishes, sometimes three parishes, and he's terrific. I used to like all Italian older brothers. I used to order him around and have him make me sandwiches, and now he's performing miracles on the altar. So it's very humbling.
There you go. It's nice you right in the beginning you have the quotes from the Bible, because it's always good to reinforce the idea of what happens at the altar. And what's great too is over the years you've been making videos of the actual books, and we're going to join one of those videos right now and take a look at Anthony presenting From Bread and Wine to Saints Divine.
From Bread and Wine to Saints Divine. Written by Anthony DiStefano. Illustrated by James Madsen. Read by the author. Of all the riddles rare and strange, the most remarkable is change. And of these changes, large and small, the greatest was the first of all. With just a word from God the King, from nothingness came everything. Why did God create all this? To share his love and happiness. How he caused this great change, though, is something that we just don't know. And so it's been through history. Change remains a mystery. Seasons change from green to gold, with warming sun and chilling cold. A dark and scary stormy night transforms by morning into light. An unborn baby, fresh and new, becomes a boy or girl like you. A caterpillar waves goodbye and soon becomes a butterfly. Sprinkle seeds with springtime showers. Time goes by, and you'll have flowers. Store some eggs and incubate, and chicks will hatch there while you wait. Plant an acorn in the ground. soon an oak tree will be found. Leave water in the freezer now. Cubes of ice will form somehow. Stir sugar, flour, eggs, then bake. Presto, there's a birthday cake.
Surprise!
A box of crayons at the start becomes the most amazing art. Logs of wood that burn in fire reduced to ash when flames expire. Lumps of coal deep in the earth compressed to diamonds of great worth. Life is full of transformations, surpassing all our expectations. But awesome as these changes are, one outshines them all by far. A mix of wheat and water spread flattens out and turns to bread. A grape that's handpicked from a vine ages and becomes a wine. This special bread and wine are made, and to the church they're both conveyed. A priest at Mass then lifts them up, at first the bread, and then the cup. He says some words that might sound odd, and bread and wine turn into God. Yes, Jesus Christ, who saved us all, has now become so very small. He has the power to exist, present in the Eucharist. But why is he so small and slim? So we can change and be like him. So boys and girls like me and you can walk up humbly, two by two. Faithful children in a line, there to eat the bread divine. Then as months and years go past, deep inside we change at last. Receiving God and faith this way, we grow more holy every day. We learn to share and sacrifice, no matter what the loss or price. We grow in courage, truth, and love, just like the saints of God above. Of all the changes here and there, of all the changes everywhere, of all the changes near and far, of all the changes that there are, of all the changes bright and blessed, to change into a saint is best.
And there you have it, Anthony, reading from Bread and Wine to Saints Divine. When did you have the idea to start doing that with your books?
To start reading the books on video, mm-hmm. You know, it's because, you know, all of these books are about, you know, I try to make them have compelling storylines, and I try to use the best artwork available. To me, you know, Doug, we're telling the greatest story of all time, the story of Jesus Christ, and it should have the greatest production values. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to see all of these little children's books become movies one day. And so in order to, you know, shepherd that process along, a natural first step was to read these books and to put music to them and to put special effects and sound effects. And of course, EWTN over the years has been very kind to me and has showed some of these book readings on the air. So hopefully some filmmaker out there one day will see the potential that these books have to really evangelize.
Well, it's also interesting too, because I've noticed over the years you pick different artists for different books for different reasons. And this one is James Madsen. Have you used him before?
Never. Okay. James Madsen is a new artist for me. The reason I chose him is that his style blends two qualities I think are essential for children to understand the Eucharist: realism and mystery. James can do photorealistic work, and I wanted the illustrations to be somewhat realistic mm-hmm. because the Eucharist is real. It's not a cartoon. It's not a fairy tale. It's something that happens at every Mass, every day, in every Catholic church around the world. But I also wanted the book to have a touch of mystery about it because mm-hmm. the Eucharist involves something beyond our imagination, something wondrous and miraculous. James can do that too because he's very mm-hmm. imaginative and because he's illustrated a lot of fantasy type books. So his artwork really captures both realism and mystery, and that's why I think he was a good choice.
Right. Interesting. One of the things you say, a dark and scary stormy night transforms my morning into light, and you show a pregnant woman. Is that thinking in terms of someone dealing maybe with an unplanned pregnancy?
You know, I have worked in the pro-life movement for over 30 years, and I'm always trying to get pro-life messages into my books. You know, the transformation from someone pregnant to having a baby, and then for that baby to become a little boy or a girl, that's an astounding transformation. Mm-hmm. Every person on Earth started as a tiny, unseen, unformed baby, yet became a fully developed child. This is a great way, I think, to teach children the pro-life message very early. Children mm-hmm. naturally understand that you can be smaller than someone else, but not less valuable, not less of a human being. So, yes, I try to get that in there.
I also noticed, just before we move on to the other book, right after First Communion, you show the children reaching out and doing sacrificial works, working with the poor, dealing with the homeless. Why did you think that was an important image?
You know, the more we take Jesus into our bodies, the more we're supposed to become like him, if we're receiving him worthily. When we become more willing to sacrifice for others, that's what receiving communion is all about. It's not just about what we do. It's something that's meant to transform us. This book tries to illustrate that with real-life examples. As you said, after receiving Holy Communion, we see a young girl pushing an elderly man in a wheelchair. We see a boy dropping off clothes to a donation bin. We see another boy offering money to a homeless man, showing compassion for the poor. These examples are meant to show kids that true faith isn't just about what happens inside the church or inside our heads. It's about how we live outside the world. It's about our behavior. Right. When we receive Jesus, we're meant to become like Jesus.
Now, the second book is a little more overtly Easter Bunny, but of course, with the dealing with Holy Week rolling up into Easter, of course, we have the institution of the Eucharist. But let's move. So that's from the first book. The second one, The Story of the First Easter Bunny. Now, this runs into a series of other animal related books. Has this one been in the works for a while?
It was. It came out actually last year and was a very, very big hit. But I wasn't on your program last year mm-hmm. because of scheduling difficulties. So I'm glad we're able to handle it now. I wrote this book because I was tired of that silly secular Easter Bunny popping in and taking mm-hmm. center stage on the most holy Christian day of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, parents can't be blind to the fact that there is an ongoing culture war, and our deepest beliefs are under constant attack from the media and the entertainment industry. I wrote my children's book because I thought there was a way to use the Easter Bunny for a deeply religious purpose, and to do that in a way that was helpful to parents, because many parents find it difficult to teach kids the true meaning of Easter because it involves the killing, teaching people about the killing of someone, and that's, and death in any form can be scary.
Right. Right.
So
absolutely.
To be able to give,
right. And
yeah.
You dealt with that in a prior book about death.
I've dealt with courage and fear of death many times. A Travel Guide to Heaven for Kids, The Seed Who Was Afraid to Be Planted.
Right.
I think fear is the biggest problem that everyone has. We're afraid of, for our families, we're afraid for our health, we're afraid for our finances, we're afraid of death. Mainly, we're afraid that we don't have what it takes to overcome all the problems we have. So, yes, so fear is something I discuss in many of my books.
Okay, with that being the case, let's take a look at the presentation of the story of the first Easter Bunny.
The Story of the First Easter Bunny by Anthony DiStefano, illustrated by Richard Cowdrey, read by the author. A long time ago, over 2,000 years, there lived a small bunny with very large ears. He lived with his mother on top of a hill. She stayed in her bed because she was ill. Now, during that time, there walked in the land a man who could heal with a touch of his hand. How strange, thought the bunny. How wondrous and odd. A man who could heal? He must be from God. So, kissing his mother, he hopped out the door to search for the man in hope of a cure. He searched all day long. He searched high and low until someone told him the place he should go. He found a large room just one story up and saw the man praying and lifting a cup. "Tomorrow some soldiers will put me to death. I'll hang on a cross until my last breath. I'll lie in a tomb for 3 days and then, before the sun rises, I'll rise up again. If you have ears, believe what I say. Believe that I'll rise on that first Easter day." The bunny was listening. His ears opened wide. He got so excited, he suddenly cried, "Yes, I have ears, and yes, I can hear. I believe what you say. It's all very clear." He raced to get home. He practically flew. "I must bring my mother so she can hear, too." Back on the hill, his mom was in bed. The rabbit leaned over, near to her head. "Oh, mother," he said, whispering fast, "I've just found the man who can cure you at last." "I'm sorry, my son. I'm old and I'm ill. I'm sure that I'll die in my bed on this hill." And closing her eyes, she fell back asleep. Her son bowed his head and started to weep. "There's nothing to do," he cried all night through. And then in the morning, he fell asleep too. But all of a sudden, he heard a great roar. The bunny woke up and dashed through the door. Out in the sunlight was gathered a crowd. The screaming and shouting were frightening and loud. Right in the middle, a prisoner was bound. With razor-sharp thorns, his forehead was crowned. Some men nailed his hands and his feet to a tree, then lifted him up for people to see. The bunny hopped closer and looked at his face. It seemed that he knew him from some other place. The prisoner, hated by people so much, was also the man who could heal with his touch. The bunny could see he was terribly weak. He also could hear he was trying to speak. He looked at his mother, his arms open wide, and said to a friend who stood by her side, "This is my mother. I give her to you. Care for her always and be her son too." He said to his mother, "This is your son," then gazed up to heaven and said, "It is done." As soon as he died, it started to pour. It thundered and lightning like never before. The bunny stayed watching and listening until they buried the man on top of the hill. A tomb in a garden was used for his grave. They moved a large boulder to cover this cave. The next day, the bunny did not leave his bed. He moaned and he groaned and he whimpered instead. But then he remembered the man had once said that after 3 days, he'd rise from the dead. Just at that moment, he thought of a plan. Maybe he'd carry his mom to the man. Holding her tightly, he left their small room and hopped out the doorway to find the man's tomb. Once in the garden, he put his mom down. She hardly was breathing and made not a sound. By now, it was evening and no one was there. The bunny bowed humbly and said a short prayer. "Oh, man in the tomb, please won't you be kind? You helped your dear mother, now won't you help mine?" Seconds and minutes and hours went past. The start of the day was approaching at last. Suddenly, something appeared from on high. It came down to earth from out of the sky. An angel of God, an angel of light, an angel descended and lit up the night. The angel reached forward and touched with his hand the stone that was blocking the tomb of the man. The stone rolled away. The tomb opened wide. A powerful earthquake shook the hillside. But then something happened astounding to see. Out walked the man who had died on the tree. The bunny was frightened and let out a sound. The man heard it once and looked toward the ground. Seeing the two, he walked over where the bunny was tending his mother with care. He looked at the mother and bent down to her. He picked her up gently and petted her fur. Laying her back, the man turned to go. The sun was just rising. His face was aglow. The bunny turned round, and to his surprise, his mother had risen and opened her eyes. His mom was awake. His mom was awake. His heart was so happy he thought it would break. The man who had healed her was walking away. The two watched together and knelt down to pray. And so, ever after, the bunny would say, the man saved his mother that first Easter day. He started to tell everyone that he knew the man had the power to save their lives too. And many were saved because they believed the life-changing news that they had received. Because of his passionate faith in the man, the fame of the bunny spread through the land. That's why we've remembered for 2,000 years this small Easter bunny with very large ears.
Interesting how you weave that into the, obviously, the gospel stories of the resurrection. How did it come to you to do it that way?
Well, as I said earlier, I wanted to somehow baptize the Easter Bunny, to Christianize him. And I thought the only way to do that was to place him in Palestine 2,000 years ago and make him a witness to all the events of the Passion Week. And also, of course, I gave him a sick mother. You know, I've always had a very strong devotion to Our Lady. And when I wrote this book, I immediately thought of the fact that when Jesus was hanging on the cross, the last direct action he took was to entrust his mother to St. John. He said, "Son, behold thy mother. Mother, behold thy son." And I thought that if the bunny in this story had a sick mother, and if he witnessed the crucifixion, and if he heard with his big rabbit ears how Jesus had taken care of his own mother, that he might be able to provide him, that might be able to provide him with an even more poignant reason for visiting Jesus's tomb and praying that line that I have in the book, "O man in the tomb, please won't you be kind? You helped your dear mother, now won't you help mine?" In other words, I wanted the bunny sick mother as a way of making children feel more sorry for the bunny and to relate to him more.
Right, and connect him to the Blessed Mother. And also you dedicated this book to your mother, right?
I did indeed. My mother, who gave birth to me and four other children, and one in heaven through miscarriage. So yes, I've dedicated a few books to my mom. She's still with us, thank God.
Right. Now, the illustrator was Richard Cowdrey?
Richard Cowdrey is a New York Times bestselling illustrator. He's the best in the world at illustrating animals. And what I mean is he's absolutely brilliant at giving animals human-like expressions and features. After all, these books, Doug, they're really about people. The animal characters stand for human beings. And the reason why it's sometimes better to use animals than people is because animals are more approachable. They're more adorable. They're less intimidating for adults. And Richard has this amazing ability to capture those adorable characteristics. Had he been living at a different time, he would have definitely been recruited by Walt Disney to work on Bambi or Pinocchio or those early classic animated movies. And like I said earlier, one of my main objectives in writing these kids' books is I want to produce Bible-based children's books with powerful storylines and Disney-quality artwork. We're trying to tell the greatest story in the world here. As I said before, why shouldn't we have the greatest production values?
Right, and you obviously get to retell the story through the eyes of the bunny and obviously what happens with his mother and about how she was effectively saved because of the works of our Lord, and about the idea of the cause of his passionate faith in the man, the fame of the bunny spread throughout the land. So let me ask you, do you have another kids book in the works, or you have some other books in the works, right?
God is and the Blessed Virgin especially has been very generous to me in terms of ideas. I've got a book for adults coming out in a couple of months called The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. Everybody needs a miracle, you know, in some way. So this book is for them. I have a book on the true meaning of Halloween for children coming out at the end of the year called All Hallows Eve. I have a book based on Jesus's parable about the sparrow that fell to the ground for children coming out towards the end of the year. And then next year, at the beginning of the year, I have a book about for children about the true meaning of Saint Valentine's Day. It's called Your Valentine. So I have three or four children's books and one book for adults.
Right. Well, let me ask you with those particular things. Some people would say you're trying to baptize these things. Well, we should really just dissuade people from paying attention to these things like Halloween and Easter. You have a different perspective.
Right. Well, we shouldn't give up. That's the equivalent of surrendering. These holidays are Christian holidays. They're Catholic holidays. Valentine's Day is about Saint Valentine. Easter is the most central, you know, message of our faith about the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. The secular culture keeps trying to take these holidays away from us, and there's no reason why we should let them. We have to fight back, and we have to reclaim what is ours. And that's what I've tried to do with Christmas and all my Christmas books and my Easter books, my Palm Sunday books, you know, the donkey that no one could ride. Well, it's what I want to do with Valentine's Day as well. We got to fight the culture back. We can't just surrender and say, sure, take it. You know, put all your propaganda into the ears of these children. No, the children are the first line in the culture war, and we got to go after them.
Right. Speaking of ears, we have the story of the first Easter Bunny, of course, and the other book we talked about today, From Bread and Wine to Saints Divine, both perfect books for Easter, both available through EWTN's religious catalog, EWTNRC.com. For all things Catholic, thank you, Anthony, for joining us, and thank you all for joining us right here on Bookmark. We'll see you next time.